Hey there, Ruby fans. Welcome to another edition of the Ruby After Show on AfterBuzz TV. Today, we are talking about the world of Remnant, Between Kingdoms, and Volume 4, Episode 3 of Runaways and Stowaways. Guys, we're on a boat. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
I will never get over how anime this opening is.
It's incredibly anime, and so I love
great.
It.
It makes me so happy. It's so funny because, like, the show is at its saddest, but, like, this song makes me so happy. All right, guys. Hey, Ruby fans. For those of you joining us again today, we were here earlier today, Mark.
Oh,
and I,
yeah.
Thank you for tuning in, and thank you to everybody who wasn't able to come earlier but is joining us for the show this evening.
You mean those of us who have day jobs?
That was mean.
That's really mean.
That was very
And I was
mean.
At my job because I work here.
That's true. You do. Let me go ahead and introduce my fantastic panel. To my left, Mark Donica.
Hello, I'm the internet's Mark B. Donica. You can find me on Twitter at Mark B. Donica. And to my left, it's the left, right?
Yes.
I don't know. That's the one where it looks like an L. Stacey Shuttleworth.
Hi, guys. I'm Stacey Shuttleworth. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Stacey Shuttles.
And I'm Katie Cullen. You can find me on Twitter at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T.
And I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at the Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. Katie's got an eye on the live chat. And we are also going to be keeping an eye on the hashtag RWBYABTV.
I can do Twitter.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, focus.
Mark's all over it.
Focus.
Yeah. Mark's all over it.
Focus.
My man. So, guys, I want to start off talking about the world of Remnant, but I also want to just kind of emotionally check in with you all. How are we all doing right now?
I'm going to go collapse in a heap somewhere. How about you?
I'll be right next to you.
Okay, let's do
it. I'm good.
Aww, that's adorable.
Someone screen caps that and just photoshops little hearts and lacy text.
Aww.
Heap shipping.
Well, I gotta be lacy text. Yeah, I'm all right. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm very intrigued. I will say, watching these two episodes, I feel feelings, but there's also, like, a lot to unpack, and there's a lot of, like, foreshadowing going on, so... That's a lot of this. A lot of today's panel is going to be prediction based, just so as you know. And
That Metroid, though.
I do also want to say, for those of you who might be tuning in for another reason, we are going to be making our Red versus Blue DVD Blu-ray combo pack giveaway announcements at the end of the show. So stay tuned. Okay, I think that does it for announcements right now. So let's start with the world of Remnant Between Kingdoms. I love that we got an introduction to all of the different kingdoms through the various world of Remnants that we got during the interim. What did you guys think of this kind of look in between the kingdoms?
I think this is really going to be working with what we're seeing with Team Ranger right now. Because we just got this entire village is dead because bandits attacked it and then Grimm happened. And then we got the bit of the background in the world of Remnant with bandits and Grimm, and these are how different villages survive, and this is how this sort of works for them. Like, it was very much a life sucks and then you die sort of world of Remnant.
A little bit. It was.
But it's good to have that background, and I'm sure we're going to run into those bandits, and I'm sure we're going to see more of that.
Yeah, and if anybody's going to make a life sucks and then you die world of Remnant, it's going to be Crow.
Naturally.
I don't know. I think Salem would be pretty high up in that.
That's true.
I mean, everything sucks, and then I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, no, life sucks.
You just care, and then I will kill you.
I have made your life suck. Time to die.
Stacey, what do you think?
Man, I thought it was really interesting kind of seeing, and a lot of confirming what we were seeing in the episode. I like that we got it after we had already been thrust into seeing these little villages. Because, I mean, this volume has been the first one that we've really gone out into the world and seen these little villages. So, and then going back and having certain things confirmed and a little bit more in-depth explained to us. Now we're ready to go back. And
yeah, I love the timing of it. Because first we're introduced to a village that the team saved. And then we get to a village that Jean cared about that was decimated. And we get the hint about the bandits. And then we get this as a follow-up. If we had gotten this earlier, I don't think the emotional gut punch of what happened to Jean's childhood vacation area, I don't think it would have been as impactful.
Everything that Jean loves goes up in flames. Let's be real.
Everything he loves dies.
Yep. Rough for him.
Specifically in flames.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, it's rough. I like that we get this information, too, because it says a lot about where we're going to be going. You know, the villages that are still around are probably villages to be contended with, because they either have great barriers, a strong military, or very, very stubborn people that will come at you with pitchforks.
Or they're villages that just started.
Yeah, that are not around long for very this long. World.
I think we might even get not necessarily villages, but other bands of people.
Oh, yeah.
Who are just constantly traveling.
Other adventuring parties.
I just mean traveling civilizations like we
nomads.
Had. Like, oh. Yeah, nomads. So to avoid everything and any possible negative emotions that come with the Creatures of Grimm, oh, this area is pretty bandit heavy. Instead, we have traveling cities instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
caravans.
I like the idea of kind of this continual Oregon Trail across the kingdoms of Retinet. That sounds fun.
Oregon you have died of dysentery and then Grimm. You have died of dysentery. Your family's grief attracted Grimm. They died of Grimm.
Aww. I was going to say, do you hunt buffalo Grimm? Are buffalo Grimm a thing?
Probably.
They could be.
Oh my god! We went to Yellowstone when I was a kid, and I got to see a fully grown bison up close and personal. Those things are scary. They are big, and they don't care. So I feel like if we're going to have hoofed Grimm, bison are going to be the second scariest thing you could possibly have. The scariest thing you could possibly have with hooves is a moose. Moose are giant prehistoric creatures that really super don't care and whose eyes do not reflect light.
What would the literary reference be?
Do we need one?
We've gotten them for everything else. No, for the Grimm.
That just means that we won't have Moose Grimm, and I am good with
that's
that.
Fine.
With its evil antlers? You know what would be
I'm
cool.
sure there's some Canadian fable, oh, or sure. I don't know.
You
know
what would find it, though.
Yeah. But, and we'll talk about different based Grimm when we get to episode 3. But what I would really like, just talking about, like, antler-based Grimm, if anybody's seen Princess Mononoke and the Spirit of the Forest.
The Grimm Forest Spirit.
I would absolutely love to see an evil Grimm version of that.
We got that. That was what the Nightwalker was. Without its head, remember?
I don't. Off the top of my head,
No, that movie traumatized me.
Oh, that, like, towards the end. I wouldn't... It
Where
wasn't
it murdered
evil.
Almost everything.
But it wasn't evil.
It was a spirit
was
of...
fine in
it
the
was
end.
A spirit of death at that
Whatever.
Point.
Whatever. Anyway.
Also, the literary reference for a Moose Grimm would definitely be Bullwinkle.
Oh, God.
I suppose so.
Only if there was flying squirrel to go with it.
Why wouldn't there be flying squirrel Grimm?
Which watch that?
Terrified, just little flying squirrel.
Yeah,
only
and
if
they
it, swirl.
Only if it still
terrifying.
Has the only if it still has the Bullwinkle voice. The Bullwinkle voice. The I'm gonna get you if you if the last thing that I do.
You're gonna kill him.
Something like
it
that.
It would have to be a bad pun.
Probably.
But anyway. To kind of to get back to the world of Remnant that we have, we also get a little bit of talk about the uncharted territories, which is, you know, Crow acknowledging that there are places on the map we haven't talked about. Mainly that big shadowy place.
You must
like
never
dragon.
Go there, Simba.
And now here's a question. He also says, and somewhere out there, she is. And we can probably assume that the she is Salem. Mm-hmm. Hanging out in her shadowy kingdom filled with Grimm spawn or whatever. But is it possible he's talking about somebody else? Possible that he's talking about Raven? Possible he's talking about somebody we haven't met yet?
If there is a somebody else, if it mm-hmm. could be a somebody else, it would be Raven, but I'm pretty sure it's Salem.
I mean, CinemaSins would call it playing the pronoun game, so we don't yeah. really
so we
have
to know
an answer.
So we have to ask who she is. Ding! Exactly. Well, again, I absolutely loved... I can't talk enough about how much I love the animation style with this, and I really appreciate the choice for Crow as the narrator for these ones. Do you guys have any other thoughts on this episode of The World of Remnant?
Malachroma says they're holding out for Grimm the size of mountains. The sea Ooh. Dragon Grimm was great, but give me something bigger. Jennifer wants Chipmunk Grimm, and half the chat really loves Moose and Squirrel. Standing by Life wants Owl Grimm.
Ooh!
And heads that turn all the way around.
No, not ooh.
Who?
There you go. Perfect. Nailed it.
The Zen treat. Yeah.
Right?
That would be so cool. All right. So, yeah, talking about different types of Grimm, let's go ahead and move on into Volume 4, Episode 3 of Runaways and Stowaways. Guys, like, I love that this episode was 20 minutes long. I love that we're getting, like, 20-minute long episodes right now.
Yes.
Actual TV length.
Yeah.
I'd have to imagine that the animation team is just kind of collapsed in a heap anytime they get a chance to think.
Can we take a minute to appreciate how freaking special, like, this volume in particular is? Looking at the set pieces and the lighting, I'm looking at all this and going, like, I'm not an animator, but I know for a fact that they have to create all of these different assets just for this one set piece, this one action sequence, and holy cow, guys, it was amazing.
Yeah, they have to they have to design them, they have to build them, they have to rig them. It is a multi-step process that goes through multiple people. Thank God they're using Maya at this point.
Yeah, I know that some people aren't crazy about that new transition, but guys, it was the right move, and it looks fantastic. Yes.
Who's not crazy about the transition?
There's some people who prefer the way it looks in Poser, but you know what?
They're posers.
But I love the way it looks in Maya, and you should always go with the industry standard unless you have something better.
Yeah, and at the moment, Maya is the industry standard. That's what people in art colleges are learning, so it'll be easier for them to be like, we need animators, come, as opposed to, we need animators. Do you know Poser?
Specifically trained in this kind of niche software, which nothing against Poser. Like, it worked really well for the first three seasons. It worked phenomenally. Right. But, like, seeing the new engine, it is a tier above. And I just get lost in the sky, guys.
God, yes.
I get lost looking at the sky and the stars. It's so nice.
Hey, look at that sky.
Dead sky there.
Oh my god, it's so good.
So before we kind of jump into the Blake side of things, I want to start off talking about Yang. Because I feel like this is the most emotionally driven sort of... everybody's dealing with their own stuff right now, but I feel like Yang in particular is the most emotionally driven plot point at this particular time. Particularly with the way they're portraying her PTSD. And I wanted to pose to you guys, you know, what do you guys think about where she's at right now?
I mean, there's part of me that's impatient for her to move on, but having not gone through anything remotely similar to this, I don't feel like I really have the right to be like, oh no, she should be over it, because everyone handles this stuff really differently, and that was an extremely traumatic event!
Yep.
I mean, I love the way it's super, this understated, I mean, it's very, very clear what she's going through and how she's not really handling it. But it's in a very quiet, very subdued way, except, you know, when things happen and it flares up really bad like that. And just the kind of disconnect with introducing, you know, her getting an arm and having this chance and then just having no motivation to take it. That was a really big kind of important facet.
I think that speaks to Yang's resolve, though. It's the fact that she wants to figure out how to live like this instead of getting the easy way out with the arm. It also tells us something interesting about our boy Ironwood. Like in episode two, it was initially like, oh, school's coming back. You're welcome to come anytime. But now with the arm, it's like Ironwood already had it ready. He seems like he is just riddled with guilt about everything that's happened.
Yeah. It was his precious robot army that got taken over. And it was that his precious robot that got problems.
Torn into bits.
And Ospin, you know, now having disappeared, and again, we'll get to that a little bit later, but with Ospin gone, you know, I think he is trying to make up for it. I think he's trying his best to you know, be there for Ospin's students when in the wake of his disappearance.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I do like how they kind of play it up ambiguously. You're not quite sure if she doesn't want to take it because it's admitting to something that she's lost, or like it's fully accepting it at that point, or if she sees it as a crutch, or we don't really quite know why she's turned it down at this particular point, or if she's just, the reason she isn't taking it is because she's just not ready to move on yet. Like, that could be it too.
Yeah, I saw a theory. I think it was in the comments of Megan and I do reaction videos to these episodes, and I think it was in the comments of our latest video talking about Yang not taking the arm because she hasn't fully accepted that she's lost her arm yet. And if you look at the interpretation of this PTSD trigger moment as her trying to pass a cup to the arm that's no longer there, that could very well be part of it.
Yeah, and that's something, too, because I didn't pick up on that the first time I watched this episode. That was something that, after they pointed that out, I was like, oh, yeah, she was trying to do that. It looks like that's exactly what she was trying to do. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's really tough. So my question, we know eventually she's going to move on. We know that for a fact that she will, you know, she'll never get her arm back, but she will emotionally move past this, even though this is something that is going to stick with her for forever. My question to you guys is, what do you think is going to be the thing that moves her past this? Is it her own resolve, or is she going to be forced to move on when other people come a-calling?
I'm going to say six of one, half a dozen of the other.
I mean... Yeah. Adam is still out there, mm-hmm. And in her portion of the opening, like, we see Faunus that we've never seen before. Mm. Yeah. I think, and maybe, again, most of this panel is going to be predictions, I think that someone's going to attack, and she's gonna have to, like, she's literally gonna be forced into the situation where she has to do something.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think, especially, she's in this isolated little bubble. She has a routine. She can stay there. I mean, going to her routine, we see her kind of going through her household chores. She's settled in. I don't know that she has much inner motivation right now to kind of move on. So it might take an outer catalyst to kind of get her going again.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if it will be the White Fang or any of the people that she's fought in the past. Like, at the end of season two, it was Neo. Raven could come a calling. Who knows?
Yeah. K-Bits in the chat is predicting that Neo's gonna show up. Like, wouldn't that be a thing?
I don't think she would, because her most recent business is with Ruby and how
and Torchic
was handled. So I think she would go after Ruby first, and we haven't even seen her emerge yet.
Long range communications are down. Mm-hmm. She may not know where Ruby is, but she may have found out. This is where Ruby's family lives. Maybe she'll be there. You always start at home.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good pick. There's also, I mean, the TV stations are still up, you know, and even though the main communication lines are down, like, news is still being conveyed, you know, at least in the short run in between each kingdoms. And so it's also possible that she could see Beacon under attack again. Because there are grim troops that are, like, surrounding Beacon, even though they're trying to rebuild. So it's also possible that she could see another village getting attacked or her school getting attacked again. And she could, that could be the trigger that makes her go and try to help. I don't know.
Because Kevin attracts Grimm, doesn't he?
It's hard to say. I would just imagine that not only with Salem sending Grimm, but also just whoever's left at Beacon, probably just this swirl of negativity and just not good feelings.
Never know when he's going to emerge out of the stone, if ever, or there's just a whole bunch of unknown there.
Well, there's a lot of fear, a lot, absolutely.
Hi, Kevin.
Okay, keep bringing up the dragon. Let's go ahead and... Is there anything else you guys want to say about Yang's storyline before we move on?
I feel bad for her, but I do like that we're covering it in bits and pieces instead of just like, here is a big episode chunk that's about Yang. It's like, no, we kind of cut back.
Any coincidence that everybody else kind of got their own episode, but Yang and Blake got an episode together? I'm just poking the ships at this point.
I think.
I mean, you know, you can kind of tell from our gimmicks
ships. I think maybe it's just time. I wouldn't disagree with that. But
I mean, it's in the Camp Camp song. Damn it!
It might also. It is this fabulous Camp Camp song that this man wrote.
Chad has been saying that last season, Taiyang said that Kevin was attracting Grimm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So.
And again, I just imagine that whole area is just a swirl of negative emotions. It's probably not a good time. Anyway, before we move on to Blake's side of the things, I want to talk to you guys really quickly about iTunes. Folks, thank you so much to everybody who's gone to iTunes to rate, leave a comment, and subscribe. We love hearing from you. It is also, coincidentally, the best way to let our producers know that you guys like the show that we're putting on. This man can attest to that.
I can. I am one of those people.
Yeah. We also love that we have an international audience. So we also love hearing from you guys on YouTube, on Twitter. For those of you on the international side of things, please take a screen cap of yours and tweet it at us. because, again, we love seeing those. And they do still count. They do still matter. So we really appreciate your guys' support. And you guys, if you leave a comment, you get a shout out on the show.
Also, if you review the podcast in Google Music, take a screen cap of those too and send those to us. So, yes, we have 4 new reviews. Yay! Since 2 weeks ago. Y'all are wonderful. A++++ by Tumbling Block. This is one of my favorite after shows. It's always full of information that I might have missed, great theories and predictions, and I always enjoy listening. I'm as glad the after show is back as I am about Ruby itself. Aww. Thank you guys for being awesome.
That is the highest praise I think we can ever get. Thank you guys.
Great show by Problematic Ruby Fan. I'm far too obsessed with Ruby and other Rooster Teeth things, and this podcast is a great way to keep up with the community and theories. The hosts are amazing, and the dynamic is great. I love it, and you will too. I look forward to seeing every episode. Keep it up, guys. Biweekly Highlight by Abdelest. I think I'm saying that correctly. I was so happy to hear that the ABTV Ruby hashtag alphabet soup was returning for this volume. It's been one of the things I look forward to with each new season. Great questions and theories, great commentary, great guests, and great hosts. Keep it up, guys.
Aww.
That last great was all in caps.
Aww.
And Boy, It's Good to Be Back by G_off2886. Great to see you all back and talking Ruby.
Aww.
Short and sweet. You guys are great.
You guys are so wonderful.
We love you.
Aww.
Thanks, Jeff.
You guys are the best. All right, let's go ahead and get back to it. So Blake is not on a one-woman quest to take down the White Fang.
She's on a boat. Everybody look at her because she's sailing on a boat.
Do we think she's going home to see her family?
Well, that's what she said.
That is what she said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's going home to Menagerie, but specifically, are we thinking that the Faunus in the opening are her, like, father and brother?
That I've seen father and brother, I've seen father and mother, I've seen a few other theories. I would not be surprised.
What if it's double dads?
Maybe.
Dads
Maybe.
For days.
Who knows?
Maybe. I don't know.
Parents.
Double dads is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the shorter one looked very young, so that was my assumption. I assumed little brother.
I mean, I could go into not family-friendly identifiers, but I won't, because it's a family program.
Ish. Okay.
Depends on who we have on.
Ish. Depends on the day.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so she's kind of going on this soul searching, gonna go back to her roots and try to figure some stuff out. It's also possible that she's going to see them to obtain something, you know, to help her on her eventual quest against the White Fang. How do we feel about Sun following her?
What the hell, man? Just like, on one hand, I get the concern. I get it. She did the thing and then she ran off and disappeared and you're worried about her. Like, I completely understand. But you also put a cloak on and followed her onto a boat and the whole thing is just kind of... How were you socialized as a child? Were you socialized as a child?
I mean, clearly wasn't. I'm sorry. Please remind me, what is the team name that he's a part of?
Hot and Useless.
Ah, that's what it was.
He was useful for an entire fight this episode. It's groundbreaking.
Yeah, but when he made his appearance and trying to say, I know why you did it, it reminds me of the Sun that we've known for the past couple of seasons. Mm-hmm. Like, he hasn't, and I think anybody who hasn't sort of updated their look hasn't, They made it a physical thing to not... They haven't changed yet. They haven't evolved.
He hasn't
gone. He had a cloak for a hot second. That doesn't really
get
count.
That biz right out of here. I'm back to my old self.
He's still the same person.
Yeah.
He is. And I think that does really explain why he followed her. That's the disconnect between the two of them. Like, really didn't want anyone to go with her. But I feel like he would be like, I'm storming off, and he expects all his friends to follow him and then come to rescue him. And he doesn't really understand, I think.
And he's like, I ditch them all the time. Yeah. It's no big deal. It's fine.
I don't think he understands that, like, no, she doesn't actually want anyone with her.
And so on one hand, he's not stalking her like that. On the other hand, he's still kind of stalking her. It's like...
Yeah. And the other thing is, too, is we don't necessarily take into account whether or not he's running away from his problems either. I mean, there was an entire school of people filled with people who were his friends who are now, like, you know, their school has tumbled and all of his friends have scattered to the wind. That's, you know, with the exception of his team. That's something kind of traumatic to have gone through. And, you know, it could be that him following her is also kind of his way of dealing with it. Of just like, I'm going to look forward.
But he also, it was brought up that, well, what about abandoning the rest of your team? And he seemed not as confident when he mentioned, they'll be fine without me. I told them that I'd be gone for a little while. And then the nice callback. It's not the first time that I hit out on a boat. Pretty good. Pretty
solid. Do you really
solid.
Think I'd get Neptune on the ocean?
Yeah.
And also, I'm already on the boat.
So. Now here, we're committed.
Too late now.
I have two feelings on this. I obviously, I think it was wrong for him to, like, stalk her. But I'm glad that she does have a confidant in this particular moment, because her running away from her problems, it's a bad habit that she keeps falling back on. And that's no way to go through life. Eventually, you have to confront your problems head on. You know, she didn't even tell any of her friends where she was going. It's not she like, hey, there's something you. I have to do. I love you all, but I gotta go take care of this.
Here's your Yang, or most of her. Yeah. I gotta go.
Bye.
But,
yeah, she didn't do that. So, on the one hand, you know, I get why he did what he did. But I'm glad she has at least someone there to kind of remind her of, like, her friends and what's important, things like that. On the other, and someone who's just generally fun to be around as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Sun was there when all of that went down. He
understands.
Gets it to an extent.
Yeah, he didn't see what she saw or go through what she went through, but he has a better idea than I think a lot of other people would have. Right. However, and this is something I'm not sure how I feel about, there is a theory right now going around that the reason he's following her is because he's actually associated with the White Fang.
Oh, and he's a double agent.
He's a double agent.
For Adam.
Which, on the one hand, I'm like, I don't think so. On the other hand, I'm like, what a great twist.
What a twist.
Pretty crazy double cross, yeah. Because we're not used to it, especially with his really bright and sunny disposition. Just kind of the nothing bad happens. So that would be a really interesting turnaround.
If you go back to the source material, I don't think they would do that. But,
no.
But I mean, they have twisted people's, I mean, Flip and Sender, for goodness sake. But I'm hoping that, I'm a fan of the Journey to the West story. And so when he mentioned it'll be a regular Journey to the East,
yeah.
I'm hoping now that maybe we get more from that text. That's just me, because I'm a fan. It's like Sandy or Pigsy or something. And they're going to Menagerie, so there could be a pig pig
exactly.
Faunus. Or another water creature faunus that could be Sandy. I'm into it.
If it turns out that he is evil and he's a double agent, when we get the reveal, I really want him to go full ghost face reveal.
Like, just go
scenery chewing completely off the handle. Like, if we're gonna do that, go. Just go. And it really is a full on ghost face reveal. Just do it.
I love ghost face
reveals. Pull a ghost face. Swing for the friggin' fences. Just do it.
Just, they go from being a normal person to, I'm evil! It's so much fun.
It's great. And if you don't believe us, watch literally any Scream movie. Because that is always what they do. It's like, you're relatively sane, and then you tear the mask off, and it's like, oh.
You literally, it's like, oh, here's this piece of scenery. I'm going to start chewing it now, apropos of nothing.
Hello,
it's so great.
Blake.
It's so much fun. Anywho, let's go ahead, and there's something that's following this boat, though, and it just happened. Well, the first time we see that fin, I'm like, oh my god, guys, it's a water grim.
I just paused it and turned on the episode Serpent's Pass from Avatar The Last Airbender and watched that, and then watched the rest of the episode.
And we get this wonderful reveal, but I want to ask you guys, before we got the reveal, I was thinking 100% water-based grim.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of water grim would you like to see in the show at some point, because we are on this, you know, boat voyage thing.
I have three.
Voyage thing.
I have three.
No.
I want a very, very old turtle, because the older Grimm are, the smarter and stronger they get, and giant old turtles, terrifying. Megalodon, giant sharks, Cthulhu.
Cthulhu Grimm would be the best.
This is what I want. Grimm Cthulhu with little tentacle. Like, I want it in my life.
Stacey?
Well, a giant sea turtle, like a giant ancient sea turtle was one of mine, too.
Like an island.
Come on.
Now we're really going Avatar Last.
What's your left?
Stacey.
Oh.
I was going to say we're getting straight up Lion Turtle.
I know, right?
Yeah, territory. Here we go.
I agree with Mallory, who on the hashtag, which is hashtag RubyABTV, said Hippogrim.
That's horrifying.
That's terrifying. It's the equivalent of the Elephant Grim, but in the water.
Yeah. Renji wants a Hydra.
Yeah, that would be great.
Exactly. And Jason goes, Jellyfish Grim.
Okay. We kind of got that.
Yeah, we did.
A little bit. Yeah. I was going to say Manatee Grim, but now I'm thinking about it. No. Swordfish Grim.
Hey!
I mean, we technically got a hint of that in the food fight. So.
That's true.
Swordfish. Yeah. Let's go with Hammerhead Sharks. Ooh. Hammerhead Sharks are horrifying, vicious things that will eat anything. People are afraid of great whites. Hammerheads are worse.
That would be a terrifying design.
Yes! Yes! With its eye. Oh, guys. So we want to hear from you guys in the chat. What kind of water-based Grimm would
favorite
you
favorite one
see?
Right here, Jason Templer says Dory Grimm.
Oh, I would forget what it was attacking.
But it would attack in a herd.
Ant says Kraken Grimm. K-Bits is with me on Cthulhu. And Robert Lawrence says Giant Crab Grimm. Hit the weak point for massive damage.
Crab people. I love the idea of a Kraken Grimm. Absolutely. If we don't get one before the season's out, I'm going to be really upset.
Standing by Life says Piranha Grimm.
You want to talk about tiny things that swarm?
That's going to be great. But we don't get any of those things. Instead, we get this awesome, wonderful serpentine dragon that goes full Pacific Rim with the reveal of its wings.
Oh, yeah.
I adored this dragon.
Chinese water dragon.
Yeah, it was an Eastern-style dragon, as opposed to Kevin, the Western-style dragon.
And speaking of, we have another question for the table and for you guys out there. Kevin was our last dragon. What do we name this one?
The people in the comments of our reaction video have started calling it Philip. I rather like that. I am absolutely down with Philip.
I was going to say Sokka.
Aww.
That's my favorite character from that particular episode of Avatar: Last Airbender.
Nice.
Why not?
Nice. It's Daisy.
Oh, man. I'm going to throw it to Sokka. I mean,
We
got to have the
two
Avatar.
For Sokka.
And he came right back like a boomerang.
He's also extremely dead.
Like a boomerang.
I was going to go with something really nondescript like Steve or Bob or Steve. Something, but
but chat like Steve and Philip.
I do like Philip.
I like both Philip and Sokka. So we will leave it up to you
Steve.
In the chat as to what the dragon shall be henceforth named.
Evidently, anyway, the subreddit has named it Steve.
All right, so it's Steve.
Okay, Steve the dragon.
And then Robert Lawrence says, I call it dead.
That burn
well played.
Sick.
So, okay, guys. Favorite moment from this particular fight scene, because it was just spectacular.
Seeing Sun's semblance again.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
That was very cool.
Jumping off of Sun's head because that's what he's good for.
I would have to say going full Final Fantasy Advent Children with throwing Blake up into the air.
Which, oddly enough, we talked about Monday on Video Game Movie Anatomy. We covered Advent Children that day, and we were like, that moment was so ridiculous. It was cool. It was really cool. But it was so ridiculous.
Advent Children is wonderful in a what am I watching, alcohol, popcorn dot gif kind of way.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was too young to drink when it came out.
I think my favorite review of Advent Children is the one that Sway did back on like Channel Awesome, where he spends the whole movie like ripping, you know, going through the whole review, ripping on it, and then at the very end when the screen's gone black, he just whispers into the mic, between you and me, I didn't hate it all that much.
That's good. That's politics.
I loved the we spent the budget on the graphics and got the plot from fanfiction.net.
It's so pretty, though.
Oh, don't worry.
To this day, it still looks pretty.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. We covered all of that Monday on the Popcorn Talk Video Game Movie
Anatomy.
Check
that out, guys. Check that out.
I want to bring up something that Lindsay brought up. In case y'all didn't know, we interviewed Lindsay Jones earlier today. You can go watch that right after this show is over. It's a wonderful, succinct interview. It was wonderful to have her time. Thank again.
Cannot say thank you enough.
But she had mentioned one of her favorite parts, which when I rewatched it, I noticed it a little bit more, is watching Blake's ears. throughout the course of the episode and the fight and all of the different emotions and
talking about
strength.
The subtlety in the animation.
The subtlety in the animation was
the expressions in this one were absolutely great. It's been for all the characters. Again, they're all going through a lot emotionally speaking. There's a lot to unpack, and so the animators have done a fantastic job of conveying that to match the vocal performances. It's so great.
I loved the captain and the mates on the ship.
They were really likable.
Unequivocally adored all of them. Oh my god.
Yeah, and I like that they were the ones that actually took out the dragon too.
Yeah.
They weren't just like, you know, nameless standby people, even though we didn't get a whole lot of names. They were actually the one that ended up blowing its head off. It was great.
They weren't just shadow people. They did full on ramming speed.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. Which makes me think that we're going to, you know, we're going to stick with them for at least a little bit.
I hope so.
Or that if we don't, we'll at least see them again at some point. I feel like you don't take out a Grimm that big and not come back.
Yeah, you establish yourself at that point. Exactly. You're there to stay.
Cameron Watkins in the hashtag, and I have to bring this up because dang, what about a crocodile Grimm? Have you seen those giant crocodiles they occasionally get in Florida? They're like 18, 20
feet long. Yeah, they're freshwater, though.
And if we ever get, like, Peter Pan characters.
I mean, we do.
Tick-tock.
I mean, who's Scarlet's Captain Hook? That's the only thing we have. And also, Malachroma drew an Owl Grimm.
Yes!
It was also in the hashtag.
Yes! Oh, my God, so cute! Look at his face!
Go back in the hashtag. Last time, Malachroma drew us Whitley playing Parcheesi. Which happened while we were talking about it. So,
Malachroma,
you're magical.
You were on point.
They drew Whitley playing Parcheesi. How did I miss that? I was at Disneyland, that's why. Can you tweet that again? I want to see it.
Just follow the hashtag.
Do you have any idea how long our hashtag is?
It's great.
It's been 2 weeks.
It makes me so happy. Anyway, so, okay, we get tweets. This... wonderful, wonderful scene of them together, and the way that they reunited. And again, I'm really glad that she has a confidant. Do we have anything else we want to say about Blake's side of the story this time around?
I loved the captain talking to her and just being like, you know, people travel alone for a reason. It's pretty lonely. If you ever want to, welcome to the ship.
Yeah, almost a pre-recruiting moment. Of course, she was having none of it at that point, but...
But it's a show of solidarity for one of your passengers, and that's not something you would usually get from a captain of a larger ship.
But him being able to point out a huntsman or huntswoman makes me think that he's got a past.
Oh, of course he's got a past.
Yeah, and I like the way he put it, too. It's like usually the people traveling alone are the ones with the most interesting stories. If you ever feel like sharing story time, just let me know.
I'm really bored.
The sea is a very boring mistress.
It's been such an uneventful trip.
Wait.
Oh, too soon.
So
maybe that is uneventful for him.
Maybe. I mean, maybe only take... Oh, only one
it was
this
one
trip?
This time,
man.
Yeah.
Whatevs.
Jason Templer says, next summer on Sci-Fi, Grimnado. I would watch that TV program.
Oh, we're going to see a poster before too long.
Tornado of Grimnado.
Oh, I hope so.
Oh, I love it so much. Yeah. All right. So to cut back from these very sweet and tender reunion to back to the Evil League of Evil. Okay, we get this great scene between Cinder and Salem. And it starts off with something is physically affecting Cinder. And I want to ask you guys what you guys think that physical change is. I don't think it's the maiden powers. Personally, I think whatever happened to Cinder... Or whatever happened to Salem to make her look that way, I think the same thing is happening to Cinder as well.
It's the incorporation of whatever creature she used to absorb the powers. So it's not it wasn't just that
the
she took
grim.
Yeah, it's not just that she took the power, but she is also host to a parasite, and the parasite might be locking horns with her physiology.
Yeah, because my first time through, I kind of thought, I was like, oh, is it the maiden? But as the scene kind of progressed, it became pretty clear that it wasn't, like, her fighting with a good portion of herself or anything. It was definitely something, I think something more to do with the Grimm, more tuned. Because then, of course, we saw how easily Salem kind of brought the Grimm under her control. And I think that kind of points to her fighting with some kind of Grimm power.
I saw a theory that said Grimm prosthetic, and I am down.
Yeah, like whatever. I mean,
the idea that she got hosed badly enough to lose an arm, and then it was just like, okay, we're going to do the thing, and you need to learn to control it because it's alive and it doesn't like you.
I mean, I really love the trope of, like, robot hands and also, like, monster appendages.
Yes.
I know that's kind of weird, but I really do like those things of, like, you know, again, like, the idea that she could have a Grimm arm, like, that's really cool.
What if she
that
got
would make her armed and dangerous.
What if she got infused with a geist?
Yes!
Maybe.
Yes.
Maybe.
Maybe. I'll say it again. What if she got infused with a geist?
And that way she could, like, she would have the power to be able to, like,
form whatever she needed as her arm, and she could have just cut off some poor girl's arm and taken it as her own.
Or if she picked up Yang's arm.
Oh, that would be amazing! That would be awesome!
So terrible. I feel like that is a level of creepy, messed up, and visceral that I'm not sure this show is willing to go.
We're getting there.
We're willing to go crazy fantasy visceral, but picking up someone else's dead arm and attaching it to yourself is like, we're in horror movie territory.
You're disgusting, Megan.
I'm not talking good horror movie territory.
No, I'm thinking like Full Metal Alchemist, how Scar had, spoilers, had his brother's arm. Yeah. Like, I think that's really
cool.
That
was an alchemical accident.
I think that that's a little different.
That's extremely different.
No one's using it. Just walking
over. No,
this would be a vicious, like, I'm taking her arm and I'm going to wear it. I'm going to master that thing and then I'm going to fight her with it later.
I still have one of her weapons on it. It's great.
Might as well. Speaking of a completely different thing, I know we passed it, but I have to shout this out. RMaster121 in the hashtag says, Lawyer Grimm. Or Giant Mosquito Grimm. I think Lawyer Grimm, you have something there. Terrifying.
Aren't they
creatures.
The same? I mean, what?
Bloodsuckers.
Oh,
it's a joke.
Lawyer jokes.
Just the, like, welcome to the Grimm Court.
Standing by Life says it was Yang's left arm, and this is affecting Cinder's right arm.
So, yeah.
So we've got a Rakshasa thing going on where the hands are backwards.
So, yeah, she wouldn't be able to pick up. She wouldn't be able to pick up Yang's arm. That wouldn't work. That wouldn't be very helpful.
Or rather,
it would be funny,
I guess
though.
She could
or
still.
Other directions.
But it wouldn't be as helpful.
No.
Evidently, we got the left and right mixed up. Anyway,
it doesn't matter.
It's the ones that doesn't match.
There we go.
But in the end,
it's not going to match.
In the end, she would be all right. Because that's all that's left.
Don't encourage her.
He gets like this. See?
All right.
Did you miss me last episode? Did you miss me?
But
yep, that's me. You might be wondering how I got here. Well, I'm about to tell you.
Anyway,
you're encouraging.
So, talking about these two, you know, Salem asks her again, and for some reason, it seems like she has reason to believe that Cinder might not have been forthcoming. She just really wants to make sure Ozpin's dead. I want to reaffirm with the table, he's not really dead, right?
I think he disappeared.
If he's dead, he's not dead for good.
No.
He's going to come back as a big giant head in some way, shape, or form.
That's what I said. Going back to RTX 2 years ago, it's going to be big old giant head Ozpin.
So Mark gave us a heads up there.
Okay, stop that. Anyway.
No, never.
Stacey, thoughts?
I don't know. I can't tell, honestly, at this point, if, like, either Cinder does really think that he's dead because he disappeared and she's like, yeah, he's done. Or if she's not sure, but she's acting like she is, and Salem knows that.
Yeah.
Which is why she kind of keeps asking.
I kind of tend to agree with that in that, yeah, I think he disappeared, so she thinks he's dead, but you can't really be 100% sure.
No body, no death.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think Salem kind of knows that. Like, she's like, no,
And I think Cinder's afraid of the possibility that he's not.
Mm-hmm. And I have to wonder if, because the Metroid Tentacle Grimm came on screen.
Jeremy.
Sounding like the Grimm.
The death jellyfish, the whatever we're going to call it.
Jeremy.
Bob. Jeremy?
Jeremy the jellyfish.
Is okay, it Jeremy? Great. I was just going to go with Bob. Bob Jeremy. The Destroyer of Worlds. So Jerobob shows up. Bob-a-me. It's Bob-a-me now.
Just get to whatever point you're trying to make. We do have a time limit.
He may have gotten some information from Bob-a-me that... yep, I have to stick with that. That contradicts what Cinder said. Because she was definitely communicating with the thing. And I loved the fisheye view that we got from it. The red-tinged fisheye view looking at Emerald and Mercury going, I regret all of my life decisions ever.
It's pretty gross.
Yeah, they don't...
Ooh, who do you think did it? Malachroma made a Grimnado poster already. I flippin' told you. All you need is a little push. That's all you need.
God yeah. bless.
Yeah. It's beautiful. And it's the Volume 4 Grim, too. Oh, so.
My God, you are updated amazing.
Viz. Malachroma, you bring joy into my life. So thank much. You so much.
Oh, my God.
But something else to note here is that she, you know, they're increasing their numbers at Beacon, but she's also searching for an artifact. Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. I want to know what everybody's theories are on that particular one. I have one. I think it happens to be Ruby Slippers that she's looking for.
I think it's Ospin's mug.
She is the Wicked Witch.
I think it's Ospin's mug.
I think it's Ospin's cane.
The cane, right.
But they did say that it wasn't Ospin's weapon.
Who says that?
Who said that?
I think there was an interview at some point. Like, that has been supposedly. Guys, help me sources. With links here. Help, please
cite
help.
Cite your sources.
I know, cite my sources. Help me with links here. I feel like that came from someone.
Sorry.
What do we have?
Somebody's requesting a Chupa thingy Grim.
I like it.
Eats all the goats.
Like it. Okay, we are running short on time, and we've still got quite a bit to get through, so I want to know any other thoughts on this scene before we move into some rapid-fire predictions.
This was glorious and very horror movie, and I will be interested to see where Mercury and Emerald go from here, because they did not sign up for this.
They look like they regret their life choices.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're in a lot deeper than they really ever thought, and it'll be interesting to see if that turns them around or if they're going to stick through it.
And we haven't even heard Mercury this season.
No, he's been oddly silent. Just like that's not necessarily him. We still have a giveaway to do, Steven. Sorry, real quick. Okay, guys, that was our predictions.
Yeah, we did predictions the entire episode.
Yeah, we really did.
Basically, yeah. So we have a giveaway. We picked retweets from our... we each individually had a tweet out. If you retweeted any of those, you were eligible to win. So, drum roll, please. The winner of Katie Cullen's particular retweet session was...
Tom Wyndham, T.W. Wyndham on Twitter. Congratulations, my man.
Yay! And the winner for Mark's was...
X Inspired on Twitter. Woo! That is... Yeah, it was no joke. Woo-hoo. No joke, you won a RVB Volume 14 DVD.
Special edition Blu-ray DVD comes with all the bells and whistles and I think a coloring book.
Yeah, yes. Caboose's coloring book.
Yep.
Sweet. And the winner for mine was Aqua Kazaz. And I don't know if I'm saying that right, but it's at Aqua CZAZ on Twitter. Congratulations. We will DM you guys for details.
Make sure you're following us so that we can contact you.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you guys so much for participating. Congratulations again to the winner. Thank you to everybody who participated in the contest. It means a lot to us that you are both supporting us and supporting Rooster Teeth. Thank you guys so much. Going around the table, Katie, where can people go if they want to find you?
You can find me on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and YouTube at Kiaxe. That is KIAXET. I am also on Snapchat at Kia Prime. I am on all the shows. We have Z Nation on Monday, Star Wars Rebels on Tuesday, Arrows on Wednesday. It's off for a week, and the four show crossover is the week after that. And then Robots in Disguise is obviously not going to be on Thursday because what is Thanksgiving? We are figuring out a new time slot. Follow the Twitter. We will let you know.
Stacey.
Hi, I'm Stacey Shuttleworth. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Stacey Shuttle. I'll be a little quiet online because I'm preparing for a craft fair. That's another thing I do in my spare time. But I will be back here on Video Game Movie Anatomy in 2 Mondays.
Not this Monday, the Monday after.
Next Monday.
We're doing Kingsglaive. Final Fantasy 15 Kingsglaive.
Final Fantasy Month.
And I am the internet's Mark B. Donica. Find me on Twitter at Mark B. Donica. Rooster Teeth website, Mark B. Donica. Instagram, all that great stuff. You can find our interview with Lindsay. It should be, like, probably on your side tab. So go watch that now that the show's over. Find us on the Rooster Teeth website. Find all of us at ABTV Rooster Team. That is our main group account. That's where we tweet out all of our information, guests, interviews, contests, things of that nature. So please follow us there. Follow all of us individually. Megan.
Yeah, there's definitely more to come. I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at the Menguin. That's THEMENGUIN. I'm also on a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz, and I write articles for the Movie Chick. That's Chick with 2 Ks. Be sure to check those out. Thank you again to everybody in the contest, everybody in the hashtag, everybody in the live chat. You guys are amazing. We love you so much, and we will see you all next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Dust you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.